Episodes in accordance for the wheelchair audience. You don't want to miss any audio clips, cause we're providing information, tips and some tricks for every state and every nation. Someone can benefit, like, what's the best fabric? Should I get the tiger's yellow carbon fiber palette?
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Wheelchair Nerds. It's fall here. I've actually had to pull out the little lightweight, but a little long sleeves here. Fall in the DMV is officially here. We're recording in late September. I wasn't ready for this. I was not ready for the fall weather, but it's okay. I will survive. And I'm chilly when it's like 65 degrees. So all my folks that are living the colder states, I am definitely a wimp when it comes to cold weather. But with fall, that means leaves are changing. And they're also some of my favorite recognition months or health awareness months and all that kind of good stuff. So shout out to our physical therapists that are listening to this podcast in October, because October is physical therapy month in the U.S. And also shout out to our occupational therapist who might be listening in October in Canada, because it's your month. Lots is happening in October. Another recognition month that some folks might not realize that is actually celebrated in both Canada and the U.S. Not sure about our global folks who are listening if it's celebrated in October in your countries too, but in the U.S. and in Canada, National Disability Employment Awareness Month is held. This was something, I'll be honest with you, I didn't start paying much attention to until I started working with adults with disabilities. And that was more on a consultative basis. Most of you guys know my primary history is working in pediatrics, but I did do some consults with adults in assistive technology and kind of started hearing the buzz about it. And then my sister actually works in human resources. So she always talks about this time of year, we have a cousin that has cerebral palsy. And so while my sister and brother both have business degrees, they still do their best to understand what their younger sister does. But my sister gets super excited when she's in HR and is like, hey, it's National Disability Employment Awareness Month, because she's actually had some folks that I know who've worked with her down at the Girl Scouts, the nation's capital. So that is what we're going to be talking about today. And I was trying to think, like, how could we honor this month? I, as you guys know, as far as disabilities go, I believe I have shared the only disability that I have that would be fall under this category is actually, I do have diagnosed with ADHD. And so I oftentimes talk about the compensatory strategies that I use on a daily basis with work. And when we talk about this topic, I want to make sure folks know that it is for all disabilities. So I'm not going to talk too much about mine, but it's something that we need to bear in mind, because accommodations for everybody is important. And I know from, you know, mine is what's considered sometimes an invisible diagnosis or disability. And I actually have to make my employers aware of that, or make them aware for like accommodations. Like my boss, Audra, is well aware about my working style. And that can be intimidating. When I first changed jobs and moved over to Permobil just 2 years ago, you know, you're kind of testing the waters, right? You're like, when do I bring things up about how I work in my style? And then first, the folks I've got as guests here on the podcast, they actually, my coworker, Hawken, he has what I would consider a congenital diagnosis. And then Robbie actually sustained a spinal cord injury in his adult life. So I would say for those guys, because they both utilize wheelchairs, theirs is more of a visual, like you can see their disability when they present for an interview or when they reach out. But I think they both have very unique perspectives on the topic. So I brought them here together to talk with you guys and share. We're going to learn from each other. As you guys know, our vision is to help folks who use wheelchairs, clinicians, and also those who provide wheelchairs, to bring the whole community together. So Hawken, who are you? What do you do? And why are you a wheelchair nerd?
Oh, thank you, Angie. And thank you for having me. My name is Hawken Miller. And as Angie said, I also work at Permobil as a content marketing specialist. And so I am in charge of social media, blog posts, emails, anything having to do with writing or content. Been doing a lot of videos, and partially why we're on video today. So, and before I worked at Permobil, I was in the nonprofit space. I have Duchenne muscular dystrophy. So I was working for an organization that my parents actually started back almost 21 years ago now, and did content marketing for them. And then before that, I was a journalist at the Washington Post and a company called BioNews.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool. So, Robbie, I know you and I met actually not too long ago. Kind of funny enough, I have to tell the introduction story, Robbie, because I think it's hysterical. So, Robbie actually works, I believe, in the finance department for his company for one of our national providers. And I was out at their event and they did a community day. And Robbie came up and we had a bowling, adaptive bowling game that ProMobile was running. And most of you guys know I'm a recreation therapist by background. So Robbie's like, hey, how would this work? And when Robbie tells you more about his spinal cord injury, it'll make sense. But he was like, I'm not going to be able to bowl. And I remember looking at my coworker going, we'll figure it out. So that's how Robbie and I met. And then lo and behold, somebody brought up him as an idea to have on this podcast. I was like, that's hysterical because I helped Robbie bowl. So Robbie, who are you? What do you do? And why are you a wheelchair nerd?
Well, I've never been called a nerd, but I will take it in this case. Thank you both for having me. My name's Robbie Barbieri. I'm 33 years old, and I am a resident of Nashville, Tennessee. I entered the disability community rather recent, 2.5 years ago. I was in a car accident, and after going to Shepherd, I've been living back in Nashville ever since. And throughout my adult years after college, I worked in finance, and I was very invested in my career. I liked what I was doing. Like, I liked the feeling of saving for a future and having a family. And when the accident occurred, all of that got thrown out the window, at least in my mind. So I'm really excited for this show. I've been advocating on a different issue, so people with disabilities can also have Medicaid while working, but I'm not going to get into that. But I recently began working for NewMotion. I work in their corporate finance department. It's about as of 3 months ago. So I've been through the interview process pretty extensively, both able-bodied and then paralyzed. And I'm not sure if I mentioned, but the level of my paralysis is C4, C5. So largely anything biceps or below, I don't have a lot of function, but excited to be here.
Gotcha. Well, thanks so much. And I have a feeling we're going to have listeners ask for on season 3 to have you back to talk about the advocacy work that you are doing, because that is extremely important. I hear this from so many people, and I know Hawken probably has heard about this too from others in his community. We're not going to get on that soapbox right now because I will get crazy on it. But yes, I would love to have you back, Robbie, to talk about that because I think you've got some great information on that topic too. But for today, we really are going to talk about what it's like for folks with disabilities to be looking for jobs. What does the interview process look like? It is intimidating. Looking for a job, I vividly remember the first job I interviewed for, official job, back when I was 16 years old. And I remember headed to the grocery store of Kroger, and my brother and sister, who are older than me, are telling me, well, don't ask silly questions, and don't do this, and don't do that. And that was your first part-time job, but you still get those butterflies when you are looking for another job. Everyone struggles with what am I going to do next in life? But I think it's important. I do my very best. I came from a family, I don't know about you guys, but I came from a family that put a very, very heavy, a lot of attention, we'll say, maybe not heavy, but a ton of attention on your career and how successful you are there equals how successful you are as a human. And so, it's really been, finding the right jobs and really pushing myself in my career has been a very big part of my life. And not that I want to tell people to find their worth in employment, but I also know that having a job that you are passionate about, having a job that interests you, that is fun, is extremely important for your overall quality of life. And so while primarily I worked in pediatrics, as I mentioned, I worked in pediatrics. The kids I worked with go up to 21 years of age, and a lot of them were, about to hit that college age if they weren't already college age and they came to us. And so really thinking about what's next. So I think first off, I think what I would like for us to touch on, if it's okay with you guys, is really talk about, Hawken, we can start with you first, but what are some of your, what is your unique perspective when growing up with a disability and you were pondering what you wanted to do with your career? And if you don't mind, like sharing how old you were when you were diagnosed and kind of that path for you in college and all that good stuff.
So, of course, I was diagnosed when I was about 5.5 years old. My parents noticed on my AYSO soccer team that I was lagging a little bit behind on the sprints that we did around the soccer field. It was a little bit of a odyssey to get there and a little bit of doctors not believing my mom to get there, but we got to that diagnosis. And I don't remember this, but my parents have told me after I was diagnosed, well, first off, I think that diagnosis gave me a lot of peace because I realized, okay, I'm not doing anything wrong. It's just the way that God's made me. And so my parents really encouraged me, hey, you're probably not going to be a football player like you want to be or an athlete like you want to be, but you could be an author or a musician or an artist. And so they talked about the things that I could do. And that's kind of been my mantra throughout life, is to focus on the things that I can do and not what I can't. And I think that really applies to job seeking as well. So I went through high school, ended up going to USC for journalism. Any USC people out there, fight on. And that was a great experience. Really got my feet wet in journalism and interviewing and talking to people. And, you know, it's funny, my parents had mentioned early on, okay, maybe you might be an author. And having a unique name, I think that works out. And so my bylines in journalism were unique. And so it worked out that way in terms of being an author and writer. And that was something I could do. And I would say USC, and then even in high school, I was really well prepared for going into a career in writing. And my first job out of college was at the Washington Post as an intern. And I think the biggest thing that helped me in interviewing for that job is really in the cover letter and in the personal essay, really just explaining my experience in journalism and also, you know, my life experience as someone in a wheelchair and having to manage, now I manage caregivers. At that point, my disease wasn't as progressed, so I could still do a lot of things on my own. But even managing that and medical appointments and just being able to adapt to different things in life, I think really helped in my interview process there and being able to secure that first job.
Absolutely. All right, Hawk, we're going to flip it over to Robbie for a little bit. So Robbie, you had mentioned, I mean, were you that kiddo who was, so you're 33 now, you know, back in the 90s, were you creating your own business plans back when you were in elementary school about how you were going to make money? Has finance always been something that's intrigued you?
No, actually. So I was very athletically driven. I played football and baseball, and I'm sure like a lot of kids, I wanted to be a pro athlete. I actually did have the opportunity. I played football for Vanderbilt for 4 years, and I... Nice. That was like one of the coolest things of my life, but no, I was, I kind of just fell into finance. I was always good with numbers, and it just kind of found me in a way because of, I guess, the process of elimination. So while I'm not like like over the top passionate about it, what I'm doing now, I do corporate finance for my job, and I'm also doing advocacy. It's become a good combo. So
mm-hmm. Awesome. So, when you were injured, you mentioned that you truly thought that, you know, I'm not going to be able to, totally derailed my life. When did you start having those conversations with your therapist at Shepherd or post Shepherd about, hey, I think I want to get back in the job force, and how can you help me do that? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. What I guess throughout my life, the way that I deal with trauma or change is to put my head down and brute force through it, or just work, I guess, just work and then see if you can look back at all the progress. And I went to Shepherd Center for 3 months after my accident. And when I moved back, I was kind of mapping out all the expenses, like caregiving appointments, like medical costs. And I got a little overwhelmed, and I reached out to one of my mentors from Shepherd and told him that I was going to apply for a job, and really did not know what was about to come. I know a large part that prevents people from entering the workforce is policy driven, but not only that, there's a number of other things that went through my head about getting a job. It was one, can I afford it? Because you'd have to invest in a lot of adaptive equipment. To what I have time, I know in that like 3 to 12 months post accident, a lot of people with my disability are trying to do therapy and trying to just regain as much motor function. And then I think three, and that was the biggest for me, is can I do the job? If all these doubts went through my head of, hey, like I can't use my arms anymore, what does that look like? Is there going to be an employer that reaches out to me? So kind of all three of those things kind of played against me and took me about 2 years to start applying for jobs again. So
yeah, it's definitely a lot to think about, because in the therapy world, you know, from my side of it, you know, I think about like, oh, vocational rehab is there to help. And, you know, there is really cool assistive technology. For those of you guys who aren't watching this video, I highly encourage you guys to check it out. And Rob, if we get time, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the technology that you're using as someone with a C4, C5 injury. But, you know, we know that the capabilities are out there of the technology, but then you also have to jump over the hurdles of not only convincing yourself, but feeling strong enough to sell yourself, because you've got to sell the employer, potential employer, on just because you're a dude in a wheelchair doesn't mean that it's going to impact your productivity or that you're not going to be able to get the job done. So there's a lot of things that need to be pondered. And, you know, with that, I always encourage folks to check out vocational rehab as one of their resources. Throughout this podcast, we'll drop a few different ideas of resources for folks, because I think it's important for therapists. If you guys are listening to this, no matter what age group you work with, even if you're a school system therapist, I encourage you to check out what vocational rehab has available. It's a federal program, I believe, run by individual states, but I believe it's a federal program. I'm forgetting all those laws and stuff I learned back when I was in school. But with that said, look into those for your high schoolers. If you're a school-based therapist, if you're working in a pediatric hospital or an adult hospital or wherever, I often tell people, people can become disabled at the drop of a hat. And so as a therapist, knowing what those resources are really can help you have more in your toolkit to help your clients out too. And also for folks who are disabled that maybe didn't even think about that voc rehab might have something for them or loved ones. So with that said, let's just kind of start with like the job search process, if you will. Hawken, when you were looking for jobs and you hopped on the internet as a proud Gen Zer that you are, I'm guessing you went on the internet to start searching for jobs. What were some of the things that you were looking at in the job search process to be like, yeah, that's a job I think I want to apply for?
Absolutely. I think obviously to me, more of what I was looking for was not so much my functional abilities, but okay, I went to school for journalism. I learned, you know, editing, photo editing, video editing, how to write a story, how to write a lead, which of these jobs best matched my experience. And obviously there were a couple jobs like production assistants for different news stations where you needed to lift heavy camera equipment, things like that. So anytime I saw that, I was a little bit hesitant. However, now looking back, you never know what opportunities you might have missed just because someone mentioned that. Maybe there might have been a workaround. And so I'm of the mind, there's usually a workaround for a lot of things in life if you just try a few different ways. So when I was looking for jobs, it was mainly, okay, how does my experience match with this? And then also, what kind of experience would I get out of the job? And how could that, as a journalist, kind of bolster my reputation and my career? And so it's funny you talked about online. Actually, what I was really grateful for at USC was they had a lot of job fairs, especially in the School of Journalism. So they had people from NBC, ABC, LA Times, all these different very well-known and well-respected news organizations that were there. Disney was there. So I was able to start to network with some of those people. And that's what I would say too, is networking is super important. I think that's kind of something that you can't really see on paper necessarily until you meet someone and interact with them, and then they're going to remember you. I find the best success I had in applying to jobs was where I already knew someone. And I think that was the case at Permobil too. It's like,
I feel like we should tell that story, because Robbie, I don't even think you know that story, because this story is actually kind of funny. So yeah. I am Hawken's hiring manager, and I'm still his manager today at Permobil. So from my perspective, Hawken's right. He does have a unique name. So it hasn't even been quite been a year, Hawk, since you reached out, and Hawken was working, as he mentioned, with Kira Duchenne. And so here I am working at Permobil, and it's oftentimes around the holiday season, people reach out like, hey, we're working on a holiday gift guide. You guys have any resources? And so this guy named Hawken Miller reached out to me, and I'm like, oh, from Kira Duchenne. Okay, cool. And literally I thought to myself, Hawken, I've only ever known one other Hawken in my life. It was a friend of mine's little brother, Hawken Madsen. So I did what anybody does these days, where I was like, Hawken Miller. You know, so I just like Googled him, and I see all his different journalist experience. And I started to think, I was like, I know at the beginning of next year, I'm going to be listing a job for someone who can do content creation. I need the person to be able to be a fantastic editor. I need someone who can write really well. And I always say, like, I would like somebody who's familiar with the industry. And I knew, now, note, I hadn't seen any pictures of Hawken, so I had no clue he was in a wheelchair. But I thought to myself, well, if he's working at Cure Duchenne, he's got to be, I would consider Cure Duchenne as being like industry, wheelchair industry adjacent, if you will. So like he's got to know about the disabled population. He's still content for them. Of course he interacts with, huh. So he and I had a discussion, which, you know, so going into our meeting to discuss the holiday gift guide, unbeknownst to Hawken, going into that meeting, I was already like, how can I let this dude know I'm about to offer a job? Not offer a job, about to post a job he might be interested in. So I kind of dropped the like, hey, so, you know, at the end of our meeting, if you know of any other folks like, you know, looking for content creation jobs, let me know. You know, and at that during that discussion, I did, because of someone who's worked in pediatrics, I did recognize, you know, I was like, oh, he's sitting in a wheelchair. But it didn't really, you know, didn't send me either direction as far as like, he's the man or he's not. Like, I'd already thought to myself, like, he should definitely apply. And so then afterwards, I was like, hey, if you want to, just shoot me your Gmail address, you know, or your personal address. I can keep you posted, because at that time, the job wasn't posted. And so, Hawken, any other blanks you want to fill into that story from your end?
Well, I think it's funny hearing that, because I didn't know you were thinking about me for that position. I thought you were just like, hey, you might know someone who... So I took that literally, and it worked in your case. And so I reached back out, and so far, it's been great.
He's being recorded right now, Robbie. He has to say that, because his boss is currently recording her podcast that she does that he's in. But anyway, we'll talk more about the interview process.
So that's the filtered answer.
Exactly. When Hawken comes to Nashville here in November, maybe you guys can meet in person. He can tell you the unfiltered version.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for that.
So anyway, that's Hawken's version of it. So Robbie, for you, you did end up obviously working somewhere in the CRT industry. When you were looking for a job, you know, after that 2 years went by and you're like, you know, now I'm going to get serious about applying for jobs. Where did you start searching? What was, you know, what did you look for on a listing that made you say, yep, that's something I think I should apply for?
Yeah. So actually I went through a couple loops. Initially, I had no idea what was out there. I was kind of just impulsively looking. I went to LinkedIn. I checked the box, work from home, and basically sent my resume to as many corporate finance jobs as I can. And initially, you know, I would get the interviews, like I would get to the Zoom interview level, and then whether it was in my head or whatnot, I would just feel like I bombed the interview. And I think a lot of that was internal. It was that I wasn't feeling confident that there was this, not hiding the disability, but it was something I was constantly wrestling. Like, when do I disclose that? Like, how do I disclose that? There was a lot of unknowns. So the first go around, I think I was like 0 for 5, 0 for 6. And so I got serious the next time. I actually reached out to our VR center, vocational rehab center, got in touch with them. And then what a lot of people may not know is the Ticket to Work program. They actually offer job coaching and just a bunch of job boards and resources. And if you're enrolled in Social Security like I was, it was a free resource. So I kind of did a second take at jobs, and I, you know, I wanted to be intentional, and I wanted to do something that mattered to me, like rather than any like rink or dink finance job, I wanted to, you know, be in an industry that applied to my life now. So I targeted a few companies, and it was kind of like one of those things, like Hawken, I, you know, the company that was working on my wheelchair, I started asking questions and then reached out to them. And then the next thing, you know, it's like I'm working there. But there was a lot like during the interview process that I did not know. And I think conversations like this, gathering people with disabilities that have navigated through that, I think this is a great resource, because there were so many things I never even thought about. And now I know. So
what was, this is for either of you, what were some of the most difficult questions for you, well, that you perceived as being difficult questions for you to ask either a current employer or a potential employer when it came to accommodation needs? Because I think a lot of folks might struggle with that. And Håkan, I think you were telling me some stories about that.
Yes. So to me, I never really went out there and talked about my disability until I was actually, you know, hired at these different places, knowing that under the ADA, they're required to give reasonable accommodations. And obviously, when you do an in-person interview with someone, that's obviously going to be something that they see. So for me, when, you know, now I work from home, so it's a little bit easier. But when I worked at the Washington Post, at that point, I could still, you know, get off of the toilet on my own if I needed to use it during the day at the office. But I couldn't do it unless there was a toilet seat riser. And so I asked, you know, the facilities. Well, first I asked my managing editor, who I was reporting to as an intern, if they could add that in the bathroom. And obviously not a conversation you want to have with your boss, but it needed to happen. And it wasn't so bad. And they did what I asked, and no harm or foul. So that's one accommodation. And I think also what was really important to me, and what's been important to me in terms of why I'm doing so well with Duchenne, is physical therapy. And getting that PT in during the day was going to be hard because all the clinics were going to be closed when I was done with work. So they allowed me during the day to be able to, during lunch, go in there and get my physical therapy. And then I also, later on in my internship, ended up working 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. So that worked out as well. So that was some of the accommodations that I had to ask for at the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm. Robbie, what about you? I mean, you went to work for a complex rehab technology provider, nationally known one. So there are no shortage of ATPs or assistive technology professionals at your fingertips. But what, you know, when you were offered the job and you started, you know, talking about, like, because you were going to need potentially some modifications in your schedule, as Håkan mentioned, or technology, you know, what were some of the things that you had to bring up to them to ask for?
Yeah, there's a number of things. And, you know, prior to my accident, I wanted to be the least burdensome as possible. So, like, I would always under ask for myself. But since my accident, I've learned to be my own advocate and ask for what I need. And I think with the job market, that needs to be done, especially. I think what I asked for was time. It was the patience to ramp up. It was the ability for me to work not a typical 9-to-5 hour shift, but here and there, and, you know, being able to take care of, you know, the paralysis side of things, as well as therapy, things like that. And those are the two biggest things. And then I think the next is adaptive tech. And I know it kind of depends on, you know, the type of disability, but for me, and for those of you that can't see right now, I have these eye gazing glasses on, and the little click switches that I bite down on, they are very fragile. So I probably go through 3 of these a month. And really, like, when I look at it over an annual basis, I have to spend a good amount of money on adaptive tech. And so I think it's important to ask that up front. You know, when you receive an offer, I think the last thing that goes through your head is, well, let me ask them for more. But in our case, I think that's essential.
And that's interesting. And I'm glad you brought up the scheduling, because even when I was offered the job at Primobile, I hope, Angie, up front with you about, okay, so here's what I need this time and that time. And I think, you know, you're in a unique situation, but you also have to be responsible and give your employer proper time to adjust if needed. And you don't want any surprises to happen. And so the more upfront and transparent you can be, the better.
Yeah, I think I would like to imagine, maybe I'm just surrounding myself with more and more transparent people, but I think as a culture, you know, I look back, so my parents are of the silent generation. Håkan hears a lot about me navigating aging parents. I warn anybody who's younger than me, man, watch out. It's something you are not even ready for. As I'm recording this podcast, my sister's currently texting me about appointments she's at with my mother. So it's something that you just don't prepare for. But the silent generation, like, and, you know, I'm a Gen Xer, so I got about 13 years on Robbie, and I don't want to have know many. Håkan, we're not discussing it, how many years I have on you. But, you know, with that said, you know, growing up as the youngest, you know, in the 80s and in the 90s, it was, you know, tough it out. Don't ask for anything. Just keep going. And everything's fine. And I realized back when I was working at the hospital. So that was my first job out of college, was working at a pediatric hospital in DC. I worked there for 12 years. And it would always be 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock when I was on the unit writing notes from therapy sessions, because I could not handle, like, when my therapist friends were there, when we're all like there, I was talking my head off because, you know, I was so distracted, like, blah, 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 you know, I'm young, I'm in my 20s, I haven't had a grand old time, but it had to be super quiet for me to get my notes and stuff done. And so, you know, I didn't get diagnosed with ADHD until I was an adult, until my best friend, who's an OT, who also has ADHD, and we commuted to work together, and she would yell at me for making her stay at work so late. We would talk about, she's like, you got to get diagnosed. There's something wrong with you. You got to get diagnosed. And I'm only telling you that because I care. And oh my gosh. And so once I got diagnosed, I started really learning about the compensatory strategies. I was still embarrassed to apply them at work. But when I moved over to my next job, I ended up working as a clinical educator. And that job offered me the ability to work from home. And when I traveled, I had to be super focused. But then I could work on stuff late at night. Like, it really gave me flexibility on the times of day that I could work. And I do that now. Like, when I moved over to Permobil, like I told Audra that when we were going through the interview process, I'm like, there are going to be some days when, you know, you'll get emails late at night for me, because that's when I say, like, my creative brain turned on. And if you sit there and you force me to have my creative brain work, it's really, really hard. I think a lot of corporate America historically wasn't used to that. However, I always try to look for blessings and the curses, as we say. You know, I think COVID actually kind of helped with that, right? Like, because so many people had to work from home. And the initial viewpoint is, if somebody worked from home, that they're going to be sitting on a beach with their feet propped up. They're not going to be answering emails. They're going to be, you know, just hanging out and chilling. But in reality, I think a lot of people were able to see when they could be functioning at their highest level. And there's actually now a lot of research about that. So anyway, with all of that said, I'm a huge proponent of figuring out what times of day, whether it is because you need assistance with ADLs because you have physical disabilities, you are neuroatypical, whatever we call ourselves, or you've got, you know, just medical appointments that you have to get to, really figuring out what is your most productive time of day and taking that in and then presenting that to folks and saying, I mean, I am lucky at Permobil, super supportive. My boss is, you know, will often say, just get the job done. Just as long as you can get your job done at a high rate, that's all we really care about. That was a bit of a ramble. I apologize.
Yeah, I think you hit on a really big point. I know by law, during an interview process, we're not able, we have the right to pick when we disclose our disability. So at least for me, in the back of my head, I was constantly asking myself, like, do you really think you can do this, Robbie? Do you think you're going to be productive? So when I started my job, it was this big internal pressure that I need to figure out a way to be productive, because, like, it's almost like I was looking back at my disability, and because they offered me the job, I felt like there was an expectation, and that carried me a little bit. But then at the end of the day, I was able to have, like, deep, meaningful conversations with my boss and my team, and all those fears kind of went away. So that was a big lesson for me. I don't know about you, but, like, I always, like, I never want to be hired because of my disability, but those are the thoughts that, like, I was thinking of. It's been great ever since that. I think it's just being open and being honest with people around you.
Absolutely. Yeah. As we were thinking about that, it, you know, I would imagine that you guys go to the grocery store, go out in public, and you still see people that you're like, oh yeah, they're totally staring at me. And probably when you first started working, you might have run into people in the hallways or at events or just somewhere, like in the airport headed somewhere, and you know, people wondering, like, how's that person gonna get their job, you know, get their job done. So one thing that I would always encourage folks to do, and I learned this back at the former company I worked for, because one of my super close friends who worked at that company, he actually, I don't know, Bob, if you're listening to this, it'll actually be kind of funny, because he still hasn't forgiven me for the fact that one day I was doing a clinical education session, and I asked him, like, Bob, how many years, you know, what year was your spinal cord injury? And he said, 1978. And I was like, ooh, that's the year I was born. He's never forgiven me for that, because he was in his 20s and how much older he was than me. But anyway, so as we were talking through this, I remember we hired some folks onto that team that had never had experience with people with disabilities. And he was like, have them call me. Tell them to ask me any question. Like, please. I want to share with them, you know, what it's like to be in a wheelchair, so they have a better understanding of people who are using a wheelchair. He's like, I'm not that much different. He's like, I think they'd be shocked. He's like, nothing's off the table for me. And I think some people, you'll get to know folks. Some people will, you know, will be open to talking about all sorts of things. But I think what I would like to impart upon people without disabilities or out physical disabilities is don't shy away from asking the questions. Get to know your coworkers as people first, just like you would get to know the coworker as a person first that doesn't have an outward facing disability. And I find that a lot. I mean, my sister, as I said, works in human resources, and we have a cousin that has CP. And, you know, she would talk about, there's actually now a pretty well-known influencer, funny enough, Andrea, who does a lot with disability and inclusion with her advocacy company that she has. She lives out in LA now, but she used to work for my sister at the Girl Scouts of the nation's capital. And I remember Betsy talking about when she was hired on, people were like, okay, she's in a wheelchair. Okay, we understand that. And Betsy's like, it was just so interesting. It was like people were looking at her and not really wanting to. It's like nobody wants to be look quote unquote insensitive if they ask questions. And I'm like, you're making yourself look more awkward if you just don't, like, I mean, you know, it's like Hawking, when I first met you out in LA, if I was like, oh my word, you're in a wheelchair. I had no idea. Like, it's kind of obvious, you know, it's like. So what advice would you give to your coworkers who maybe, you know, might be intimidated, or even other people in culture or human resources, you know, folks out there, you know, what would you say to them to help break the ice?
I think the biggest thing for me is just don't treat us any differently than you would any other employee. I think the more you try to be like, oh, like, I'm going to give you special treatment, or like, I don't want to offend you, or I don't want to make you work harder than you need to. It's like, I'm just a normal guy at the end of the day. So I just appreciate being treated like a normal person.
What about you, Robbie? Anything?
That's a great question. I think, you know, in today's day and age with how prevalent remote work is, I try to do as much FaceTime with the people in my group as possible. So I think like in the first month, I set up like 5 or 6 one-on-ones for an hour with like the main people in my group, and just, I don't know, just like got to know them on a personal level. Cause I think it's easy these days, like, to never see the person. You get caught behind a chat and there's no connection. But yeah, that's my advice.
Absolutely. What about for folks who are like hiring managers that are writing up job descriptions or writing up job posts? What are certain things to attract the appropriate candidate of all abilities? Any things, I know a few that first pop in my head, but anything pop into your head about, you know, what would make a job listing look more inviting for everybody to apply for? A couple of things for me would be looking at, like, if it's remote work. I know for years, most of the job listings will say, like, you know, if heavy lifting's involved, must be able to lift over X number of pounds and all that kind of good stuff. To include how much travel is involved, I think is another big one. Specific hours, if hours are flexible, meaning the time of hours that you work. You want a 40-hour employee if you're, you know, looking for a full-time position. That's understandable. You want someone to be able to give you the full-time hours. But during the day, when, you know, shift work, you know, if it's shift work, obviously be upfront about the shift work. Like, you need to be here at 7 a.m. You cannot leave until 3:30. Some people, that's going to work for their day. Some people it's not. It has nothing to do with disabilities. That has to do with just kind of universal design of a job listing, if you will. I'm very big in universal design. I would love for more universal design to come over into the world of talent acquisition. And when companies look at, you know, what is happening, it's like, helping people think outside the box, because there are some super talented people that maybe can't start working until 10 o'clock in the morning. Is that going to be a deal breaker for you? That sort of thing.
I think those are all great things. And to me, it's knowing that job description is important and having those specific details, but also, where are you posting the job description? Is it in a career fair for people with disabilities? Is it on a site geared towards people with disabilities? You aren't going to get those people unless you go to where they are. So that would also be my advice. And ultimately, someone with a disability knows whether or not they're going to be able to do the job. And so you have to trust that they'll be able to make that judgment and apply as needed.
Yeah, the only thing I would add is a lot of companies, they offer programs, like it might be called job accommodation, or there's a few keywords that I'm blanking on, but I used to do that a little bit, like go to LinkedIn and search, you know, for those programs. The other thing that I like doing is, like, when I go through the interview process, I get the contact name and emails, and I, you know, if I'm deciding on an offer, I'll shoot them a note, just politely ask about culture, like things like that. And lastly, and this and this is very hard to do, but I mean, if you can, if you know anyone with disabilities that works for that company, it'd probably be great to reach out. That's what I did with my company, but I know sometimes you don't really know. So
absolutely. Communication. It seems to be communication is the theme to this podcast. You know, it's like, it's a theme that happens in most aspects of life. But I think the biggest thing is networking and communication. Actually, I'll add that networking and communication, I think are the two biggest keys to this finding a job, no matter who you are, no matter what abilities you have or disabilities that you have, is putting yourself out there and knowing, you know, feeling confident. You know, one of the things, Robbie, I want to reflect on really quick before we end the podcast is when you mentioned that you had interviewed 5 or 6 jobs, you'd gotten to the interviews and you're thinking to yourself, like, they just not want me because, you know, I'm the guy in the wheelchair. Like, is that what, and people have told me this about different things in my life. And I actually believe it because I've seen the research behind it, but there were times like when I've been looking for jobs and like, I'm a shoo-in for this job. Like, what in the world? Like, there must've been something that they saw. And you start to ruminate in that in your head. Like, wait, what was it? But really having that confidence to know that if it's for me, it will be. If it's not, it won't be. And be okay with that. But then at the same time, there is science behind the energy that you put off. So if you are confident, bar none, if Robbie and I were going to go to interview for a finance job, I assure you, he is way more qualified than I am, simply based on his education and his experience. So, you know, to put that aura out there and be like, yeah, like I'm really good at this. Like, I've got experience in, you know, in X, Y, and Z, and I meet your needs, and here's how I can meet your needs, and really owning that and then being okay. And it's so easier said than done. We all have this, no matter what our situations are, is that if we are rejected from anything, it unfortunately will get to us. But try to have that positive vibe to say, it's one for me. Bless and release is another thing I've heard a lot of. Bless and release. Like, okay, whoever gets that job, excellent for them. I hope they have a successful career. It wasn't for me. I'll release it on to the next. So any other advice that we can give for folks either looking for a job or for companies that are out there recruiting? You know, I know a lot of folks, you know, right after the pandemic, everyone was saying, oh, the job market, the job pool, we're just, you know, we're desperate. We're trying to hire people. Like, any tips and tricks?
I think from someone applying to jobs, just be confident in yourself. And like you said, if it's the right thing, it's the right thing. And don't think that you're getting rejected because of your disability, because you could get in your head and it could be they just found someone with more experience and better fit for the job. So, and even if they do, that's not a place you want to be in when you're looking mm-hmm. for jobs. And so having that confidence and knowing, yes, it would behoove them to have me on their team, and I'd mm-hmm. do great on that team. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And I think just having an open-handed response to whatever happens is very important. And then those hiring, just treat us like normal human beings. That's all I ask.
Nice. Robbie, what about you? Any closing words?
Yeah, only thing I would add is when in doubt, go for it. I think last year we're at the percentage of disability population that is employed is 24%, which has risen over the last 20 years. I say go for it and leverage all of the new technology and AI that is out there. If you, I feel like a company invests in a person first and then what they can do second. And I think, you know, all of us with disabilities, we all have the capability to work and impact the company. So
absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thank you for being on. If anybody wants to check out more resources, definitely Google, because this is how I found out most of the resources. Google through the National Disability Employment Awareness Month. If you're in the U.S., look it up. They've got the .gov has a whole page and resources dedicated to it. And then also same things up in Canada. I don't know the Canadian website up there, but Google it'll pop up. So there's just some great resources, and we appreciate you gentlemen being on. Hopefully Hawk and Robbie, maybe we can all get together when we are in Nashville in November. Robbie, so we'll give you the updates on that. So all right.
Awesome.
Thanks
Sounds
so much,
good.
Guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Wheelchair Nerds, presented by Permobile. Today's episode was brought to you by
The Permobile Corpus Seating System is designed to help you effortlessly achieve your optimal position with the assistance of technology. With up to 45 degrees of active reach, forward tilt capability of up to 14 inches of active height seat elevation, active reach and active height work harmoniously together to bring your world within reach. The seating system is constructed with quality from the ground up to ensure that you can easily find your perfect position to tackle any task at hand. Permobil Corpus Seating System is available on the F3, F5, F5VS, M3, M5, and MVS.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobil.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you. The Wheelchair Nerds.